Welcome to a special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Susan Scott, author of Fierce Leadership, a bold alternative to the worst best practices of business today. Hi, and on behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Susan Scott, author of Fierce Leadership, a bold alternative to the worst best practices of business today. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Susan Scott, founder and CEO of Fierce Incorporated, shares with us her insights on how executives and managers can transform their organizations through candid, meaningful dialogue with each other, their employees, and their customers. And so now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Susan Scott, author of Fierce Leadership, a bold alternative to the worst best practices of business today, and founder and CEO of the global training company Fierce Incorporated. For over two decades, Susan has helped executives at companies such as Microsoft, Coke, Starbucks, Cisco, and Google transform their companies by teaching them how to engage in more vibrant dialogue with one another, their employees, and their customers. She is a globally recognized thought leader, the best-selling author of Fierce Conversations, and the recipient of the 2008 Stevie Award for Entrepreneur of the Year. Susan, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Thank you. And I just heard just this last week that this next Sunday, which will be, I think, October the 3rd or 4th, will be on the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller list.
Oh, outstanding. Congratulations.
I know. Thank you. It's amazing.
That is
wonderful. I know. Blew my socks right off.
Oh, that is absolutely great. Well, I was going to say, I love the book, and it sounds like you've got a whole followership that also loves your book. But I can certainly
I think it started with the first book, Fierce Conversations, Achieving Success at Work and in Life, One Conversation at a Time. And I think people were happy to find a book that was written in a real normal tone of voice with a sense of humor and very accessible to everybody. And so Fierce Leadership is in the same vein and is a sequel to Fierce Conversations.
And that was part of what I loved about Fierce Leadership, was just the personal nature of the book. And I loved your stories. I loved how you opened the book about how you were, a story from when you were growing up and the whole concept of fierce and how you presented it. In fact, to start out our conversation, I was going to ask if you would talk to our audience about what you mean by fierce leadership, because I got to admit, when I first saw the title of the book, I'm thinking fierce leaders. Well.
Sounds painful, doesn't
it? Yeah, it sounds pretty tyrannical here. Is this where my boss comes out with a baseball bat and chases me around the table? But of course it's not that at all, but I was hoping.
Not that at all. The simplest definition of a fierce conversation is one in which we come out from behind ourselves into the conversation and make them real. And while a lot of people are deeply uncomfortable with the thought of being real and wonder, you know, if I were to disclose what I'm really thinking and feeling at this moment, that might not be a career-enhancing move on my part, I suggest that it's the unreal conversations that ought to scare us to death, because they're incredibly expensive for individuals and for organizations.
Absolutely. And you know what I guess has pained me in my career is what you talk about just throughout the book as the candid conversations that are those fierce conversations is I've actually worked in some organizations, not the one I'm currently working for, where that kind of conversation usually went with the phrase career-ending event.
Mm-hmm.
And
shame on the leaders of that of an organization that has that as the message, whether the message is clearly stated or it's the underlying awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that I guess I found challenged with and I wanted to ask you about tonight was if you're in that kind of an organization and you want to have those kind of engaging conversations and it's really not condoned, what kind of steps does a leader take to move forward a fierce leadership approach within an organization like that?
That's a great question, and a couple of things I want to say. One is that, by the way, fierce leadership is written to the leader and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in working with Google, I share their view that leadership has nothing to do with title or rank. It has everything to do with behavior and our practices. And as a martial arts sensei said, you're always practicing something. The question is, what mm-hmm. are you practicing? And there's a direct link between our practices and our results. And what gets talked about in a company and how it gets talked about absolutely determines what is going to happen and what is not going to happen. And so while no single conversation is guaranteed to change the trajectory of a career or a company mm-hmm. or a relationship or a life, any single conversation can. So to address your question, so many people hold the belief that, you know, the progress of their organization depends on the progress of the leaders and the culture in which they exist, or the progress of the economy mm-hmm. or their customers. And this is a very weak point of view. And I hold the view that the progress of my organization depends on my progress as an individual now. And so I don't have to have a title. I don't have to have any authority to really come out from behind myself into my conversations, whether it's a meeting where a decision is being made or a strategy is being designed mm-hmm. or a problem is being considered. I don't have to sit there passively and just nod my head as if I'm agreeing with everything that is said from whoever is in the front of the room. I can skillfully and courageously offer up my perspective, which may be quite different than others that are being voiced in the room.
Sure.
So sometimes people will say, well, I do say what I really think, and nobody ever thanks me for it. And it probably has to do with how they say
okay.
what they're really thinking. So there is skill involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to understand that this is not about me just trying to persuade everybody to my point of view. The ideal attitude would be, I really hope to be different when this conversation or this meeting is over. I really hope not only to influence others, but to be influenced. And that is an attitude that you can't fake. It has to be genuine. But
okay.
when it is genuine, it's magic. And you can, frankly, get away with murder because your intention, your agenda is clean.
And as you're talking about people with good intentions, so many people come to mind in the organizations that I work with because they truly had the best intentions of the organization in mind, and they weren't self-serving, undermining, or trying to drive a conversation in a way that might benefit them.
Well, yes. And we've got to put aside those self-serving mm-hmm. agendas. And we've got to work to do the hard things, which also happen to be the right things. And one of the analogies that we use, both in fierce conversations and it's discussed further in fierce leadership,
mm-hmm.
is to think of a company as if it's a giant beach ball. And everyone
okay.
in the company is standing in a different colored stripe on the corporate beach ball. And if you ask the question, well, what color is the company and who owns the truth about what color the company is, well, everybody owns a piece of the truth, and no one, not even the CEO or the board of directors or anybody in the C-suite, owns the entire truth.
Sure.
So we've got to master the courage and the skill to interrogate reality. which is not an easy thing because there are multiple competing realities existing simultaneously on any topic under the sun. Mm-hmm. But when we really say, what is your perspective? Here's what I feel, believe, suggest, and why. Now tell me what you think I'm missing. What are you seeing that I'm not seeing? Or what are you seeing that is entirely different and would take us in the opposite direction of what I'm suggesting? When we really mean that and we really ask and then shut up and listen and ask people to say more about that, keep talking, we will begin to get a much clearer picture of all of the pieces that it's important to understand before a decision is made. And it, you know, learning is provoked for everyone in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That allows us to resolve our most complicated challenges, and in the process it enriches relationships, which is one of the keys to anything fierce. If I have all these conversations and these meetings and they're very skillful and they're quite brilliant, but I trash relationships in the process, it wasn't a fierce anything, it was something else altogether.
Sure, and it's those relationships that ultimately build the trust and the security that lead to more fierce and deeper conversations.
Well, I once was told by someone that, you know, the young man who's newly married is often puzzled because this lovely person to whom he has pledged his troth, mm-hmm. and with whom he hopes to spend the rest of a glorious life, insists on talking yet again about what they just talked about last week, and it's so often about the quality of their relationship. And he wonders, why are we talking about this again? And eventually, if he's paying attention, it dawns on him, this ongoing, robust conversation that I'm having with my wife mm-hmm. is not about the relationship. The conversation is the relationship.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And so our most valuable currency is not it's not money, it's not IQ, it's not good looks, it's not charisma, it's not multiple degrees, it's not fluency in three-letter acronyms, it's not the number of gizmos attached to my person, it's not my ability to build a really cool PowerPoint deck.
Mm-hmm.
My most valuable currency is relationship. It is emotional capital. And if I don't have that, I will stall and eventually flame out in my career. And it will certainly affect my company, and I'll never even understand what went wrong.
Certainly, certainly. And Susan, throughout Fierce Leadership, you talked about two practices that I guess I picked up on. I'm sure anyone reading the book would. And they were the practice of what you called or termed squid eye and mineral rights.
Well, squid eye is a skill. The book busts six of the worst so-called best practices and
yes.
suggests an alternative. And in order for people to sort of see these things for themselves,
mm-hmm.
you have to develop squid eye.
Okay.
And I have a friend who moved to Hawaii when he was a teenager, and he went diving for squid with the native Hawaiians, and he couldn't even see any, much less catch any. And he finally asked them, why am I not even seeing any? And they said, you don't have a squid eye.
Yeah.
And they explained that you have to learn to spot the tells that indicate that there is a squid present. And squid are very good at camouflaging themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to hide. And, you know, it could be right in front of you, but you won't see it unless you know what to look for. So they explained
yeah.
to him exactly what to look for. And as he developed his squid eye, he could see the squid, and then he could catch them. But in Hawaii, it also means a way of gathering information, like having sight in the presence of the blind, seeing things that are right in front of us. And so in all of the six practices, I'm saying, what are the tells that you would notice all around you
mm-hmm.
that will tell you that these so-called best practices are actually causing a great deal of harm and are costing, in some cases, companies millions and even billions of dollars?
Certainly, certainly. And then mineral rights, I thought was interesting too. I was hoping you could elaborate on the conceptual of what a mineral rights conversation is and the questions that you use to have those deep dive interactions.
Well, mineral rights is a Swiss Army knife.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most powerful conversation, and you can use it one-to-one, as I often do when I am coaching an executive, or you can use it in a meeting. You can use it with a peer, with a direct report, with a customer. It's a fabulous customer conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the name came from someone who went through one of our early trainings probably 8 years ago, and she said, you know, this is such a deep dive. It's like mining for gold, and you're going to find gold or you're going to find water if you drill 1,000-foot well rather than 1,001-foot wells. Mm-hmm. And so it's a deep, deep conversation on a very focused topic. So the conversation begins with, given everything that is on our plate, everything that's on our to-do list, everything that's going on in our world, what is the most important thing we should be talking about today?
Okay.
And then we go into, well, tell me more about this, and tell me how this is currently impacting us, and who else is this impacting? I mean, what prices are we currently paying for this issue that's going on within our organization or within our team or even within our marriage? Because both of these books are, they're very powerful for people who are at home, who are paying attention to mm-hmm. their personal lives as well. And then you ask, you know, when you list all of those prices that are being paid, what do you feel? This is an important part of mineral rights, okay. And we don't usually
yeah.
ask that question in business.
Mm-hmm.
But Daniel Kahneman, who is a Princeton psychologist, won the Nobel Prize for Economics for his discovery that people make decisions first for emotional reasons, second for rational. This is not a girl thing.
Sure.
You know, this is a human
mm-hmm.
condition. And so if I can build a really strong case for something rationally that's just brilliant, brilliant, and wonder why in the world is nobody doing anything about this, it's because we didn't engage the emotion. It's like a car, beautiful car, a Lamborghini or something, but it has no gasoline in it. So emotions give the lit match something to ignite. And then you ask, if nothing changes, let's say it's a year from now, and nothing has changed around this topic, then what's likely to occur? And draw the person or the group out on that and ask, if that is the scenario that comes true for us, what would you feel when you consider that possible outcome? And then you ask, before we move towards solution, what we're going to do about this, let's look at our individual contributions to this issue. This is an accountability question.
Mm-hmm.
This is another question that hardly anybody ever gets asked. So where's my DNA on this? What did I bring to the party?
Oh, yes.
You know, where are my fingerprints on the,
oh, yeah.
on the gun? And it's not an opportunity to beat people up. It's just a wonderful opportunity to say, you know, I recognize that I did this or I didn't do this or this didn't
mm-hmm.
work well. This blew up on me. I blew it in this area.
Yeah.
And that's really important. And then you move to, okay, let's imagine that we're on the other side of this issue. It is resolved beautifully, completely, elegantly, no longer an issue. What difference is this going to make? And this is where the conversation becomes very lively and animated and positive, because that's where we say, wow, you know, when we're on the other side of this, this is what we're going to experience. This is the difference it's going to make. And when you consider that possible outcome, what do you feel?
Yeah.
And people say, I feel hopeful, I feel excited, I feel determined, I feel driven. I have a real impetus to do something about it. And then the last question is, well, then given everything we've just explored, what do you see as the next most potent step you can take? So we don't necessarily have to lay out the entire strategy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step? And what's going to try to get in your way? How are you going to get past that? When are you going to take this step? What do you need? When can I check in with you on this? And it's a powerful, powerful conversation. A lot of coaches use it all over the world. But it is also, as I said, great in a meeting or even with a customer. You know, to ask your customer,
mm-hmm.
what's the most important thing we should be talking about? Throw out your own agenda and ask the customer what's on their minds.
Yeah.
And have this exact same conversation with a customer. Talk about connecting to your customer. This is one surefire way to do it.
Oh, I can't think of any better way to connect to the customer than just to be very upfront and ask them what's their most pressing issue.
Well, one of the worst best practices is customer centricity. I mean, what a horrible term. I've never yet had a customer say, I really want to be more centric with you, you know? I mean, the language that we use is just laughable. It's pathetic, and it's off-putting. It puts distance between us. And the alternative is customer connectivity.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, how annoying to be on the phone listening to this message repeated over and over again. Your call is important to us. Our mission is to deliver wonderful service, and meanwhile, you're just frustrated because you can't get to somebody, and the options, you know, press one for this, two for this, three for this, and none of the options have anything to do with what you're trying to accomplish. It's just deadly.
Yeah.
And so we have all of these customer relationship management systems for which we paid millions, and they are useful. I mean, we have one at Fierce, mm-hmm. but we know when and where to use it and when the conversation needs to have nothing to do with that.
Sure.
But to, you know, to ask the customer, what's on your mind? Where does it hurt? What can I do?
Yeah. And in connecting with that customer in that very real and personal way, the customer is going to continue to come back.
Well, yes, and we've got to stop calling our people. These are customer-facing people.
Yes.
It's as if there's this special face that I pull out of a drawer and slap on my face when I'm talking with a customer, and it's different than the face that I would wear when I'm just talking with the person who sits next to me or my boss or my wife or my daughter. Use your own face. It's a perfectly good face. You know, wear it all the time. Show up as yourself and go off script from time to time, because the scripts are written for the typical customer, and there isn't one. There is no typical customer.
Absolutely. Everybody is uniquely different, and everybody wants that unique experience that addresses their needs, which are different than anybody else's.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. So often we claim to be, quote, customer-centric, and we're focused on the customer, and so we put in a piece of software, and then you get hit the buttons on the menu.
Yes.
And we don't deal with the customer's needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And can I tell you what the very first worst best practice is?
Oh, please do. Yes.
360-degree anonymous feedback.
That was one when I read it in the book. I love this one. I was hoping you would talk about this one.
Because, you know, whenever I ask somebody, you know, do you value openness, honesty, transparency, they always say, well, yeah. And does your company? Well, yeah. And do you feel that trust and respect are essential for anybody to be effective in an organization? Absolutely. So there's a tell in the name of this practice. In a company that values honesty, openness, transparency, trust, respect, what's the tell in the practice 360-degree anonymous feedback?
It's anonymous.
Why, when there's an opportunity to give someone input, whether it's to show appreciation for something that they did or to express some concern over something that they're doing, why do we send in overworked, underpaid, anonymous, and head for the hills?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every company that provides 360-degree anonymous feedback is going to hate me. They're going to come after me like I'm Frankenstein. You know, they're going to have their pitchforks and their torches, because I am saying, if I could have my way, even though companies have invested many millions of dollars in setting these systems up, I would love to see them tossed out. But I also want to say to individuals listening to this podcast, you don't have to wait for that. I mean, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If your company isn't there yet or it's going to take a while to get there, you can still practice the alternative, which is 365 days a year, face-to-face feedback. And if you can't do it face-to-face, do it on the phone. Don't ever do it via email. That's a surefire way to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it. You can model this.
Yeah. You know, and I got to admit, when I read that portion of Fierce Leadership, well, there was a light bulb that went on, and then there was a little bit of embarrassment that set in. Because as I was reading through, and I thought, you know, I do all these bad things. I sit there and I give my anonymous feedback, and then I worry about, am I writing this, and are they going to know who it is?
Exactly. And the thing is that when we get our anonymous feedback report, it might have 10 fabulous things about us and one thing that's not fabulous, and the only thing we can think of is, who thinks this about me? Who believes this? Who wrote this? And because the person filling out the form doesn't want to be detected, they are so unspecific that we really don't know exactly what they're meaning or why they're thinking this. So it is not helpful at all. And so we need to be very, very specific, very clear, very compelling, very candid, very respectful in all of our engagements. And so that when there is a formal performance review, there are no surprises.
Yeah.
Everybody knows exactly, you know, how they're doing from somebody else's perspective.
Yeah.
I really think, you know, I have an ally in my view about that practice in Kevin Kelly, who's the editor of Wired magazine, and he said that in any system that he's seen where anonymity is common, the system suffers and ultimately fails, because anonymity is like a rare earth metal. It can be tolerated in small, hard-to-measure traces, but in any significant quantity, they're the most deadly toxins out there on the planet, and anonymity is like that. I really think there should be a warning. You know how there are warnings with all the medications that we take? You know, side effects can include sudden death. There should be a warning with anonymous feedback that, you know, if you start to experience rapidly deteriorating relationships, you know, and uncontrolled barking, you know, you really need to see your doctor, because this could become permanent and could kill you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To skip forward to another fierce practice, and that was to hold people accountable. And the story that resonated with me so well was our former attorney general, and the
mistakes were made.
Mistakes were made, not the
the passive voice.
Exactly, and that just struck me. And you know, it's strategy driven. We dedicate a lot of the things we talk about to accountability. I was hoping you could talk to us a bit more about the tells of a lack or an absence of accountability in an organization, because that passive voice really.
Well, let me just say that accountability is the most powerful position anyone can take. I mean, it makes all the difference, and it's the attitude that if it's to be, it's up to me, or given these obstacles that are in my path that are very real, I'm asking myself, what can we do to get past these, through these? That's the accountable attitude. But the thing is, it is an attitude. It's a private, personal, non-negotiable choice that a person makes about how to live their lives. You can't mandate an attitude. You can't hold people accountable. As soon as you say, I'm holding you accountable for this, everybody wants to duck cover, because what that really means is, I know whose head is going to roll if this doesn't go well. And one of the tells is that people spend a lot of time and energy building the case, you know, making the long list of reasons and excuses, so that if it doesn't go well, they can unfurl the list and say, this is why, you know, he did it, did it to me, and this is why it didn't go well. And so what we end up is, we get a bad result sooner, and a lot of energy focused on building the case and people copying everybody in the universe on their emails to try to cover their tracks, cover their backside. So the alternative is to model account. Don't talk about accountability. Model it.
Okay.
And hold people able. It's really clear when somebody has a job that they have a certain set of responsibilities. Responsibility is entirely different than accountability.
Okay.
And so it's fair to say, here are the responsibilities that are on your plate. You know, I'm counting on you to deliver these things. But never use the word accountability. Just model it, including if it's true, it's saying, you know, I blew it. Or I see how I contributed to this problem. I recognize that, and here's what I'm doing to correct it.
Sure.
Don't ever use the passive voice, mistakes were made. I mean, gee, wouldn't it be nice if those pesky mistakes would stop making themselves? I really need to just say, I blew it, and I recognize it, and I apologize, and here's what I'm doing. That is so attractive. When someone says that, we're absolutely startled and amazed, and we are delighted, and we actually want to come towards that person rather than backing away from them, because it's such a rare and wonderful attitude.
Well, certainly. And, I remember back in the service, one of the very early things I was taught as an officer was, if something goes wrong, what I need to do is I need to ask myself first, what did I do or fail to do that contributed to this event happening? You know, did I not establish a standard or an expectation? Did I fail to communicate it? What is my culpability? And
right.
Yeah, but it's so absent.
And the thing is that our reasons, you know, our list of reasons why things didn't go wrong, they're true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're very good reasons why something didn't work. And my response is, and so now what are we going to do? Dwell on the reasons. So mineral rights, again, is a wonderful conversation that moves somebody out of this sort of victim-y place into, well, what am I going to do? Given this result, or given how this is going or how this is not going, what am I going to do? What's the step I'm going to take? And, you know, people are unfortunately not accustomed to being asked to think and declare a step that they're going to take. And so many people are used to being told what to do. And so we have a very passive, dependent workplace, which is a really heavy load for a leader. And ultimately, it doesn't work, because no leader can shoulder that on his or her shoulders indefinitely. I mean, it just becomes exhausting. So instead, we want a team or an organization that's willing to say, okay, we've got this problem, we've got this obstacle, here's a suggestion, here's something I'm going to do, here's something I suggest we do, instead of pointing the finger everywhere but at ourselves.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Now, Susan, I wanted to ask, kind of on behalf of audience members that might be junior executives or managers, those that feel that they lack the breadth or the strength of influence to promote fierce leadership throughout their organizations, but really want to take the practices that maybe they themselves are demonstrating and propagate that out company-wide. What actions would you recommend that they do in addition to being good examples?
Well, look, we've got to come to grips with the fact that, in a very real sense, the progress of our organizations depends on our progress as an individual now. And, I mean, let me emphasize now. Sometimes people will say, I'd really love to have conversations like this. I'd really love to behave this way, but our culture or our leaders won't support it. And I always say, look, I think I'm looking at the culture. I think each one of us is a hologram of the culture. And every time we walk in a room or show up or pick up a phone, we're reinforcing a culture positively or negatively. So fierce leadership is itself a practice. It's a way of life. Just as a martial arts sensei or a Buddhist monk behaves at all times according to the principles and practices of their particular set of beliefs. And so this is not something I just use in certain situations. It's the way I behave all of the time, wherever I am in the world, and it is really felt and seen. So I think what you have to do is simply decide to begin and begin. Pick a practice. You know, there are 6 worst best practices, 360 anonymous feedback, hiring for smarts, holding people accountable, employee engagement programs, client centricity, and legislated optimism, which is the purview of the one-way leader.
Yes.
You know, communication is from the leader to everybody else, and the reverse is not valued, is not welcome, and the message is always upbeat. Everything is fine, usually said the day before bankruptcy is filed. And so we need to go to 365 face-to-face feedback. We need to go for hiring for smarts plus heart, because it really, the next frontier for exponential growth for individuals and organizations lies in the area of human connectivity. If you want to become a great human being, wherever you are, whatever your title is or is not, You must gain the capacity to connect with your colleagues and your customers at a deep level or lower your aim. So both fierce conversations and fierce leadership tells people how to do that. I need to model accountability, hold people able. I need to actually engage people instead of just talking about it. I need to focus on customer connectivity, and I need to practice radical transparency.
Sure.
Where I'm, you know, go off message, fire the publicist, just come out from behind yourself and put on the table whatever is really going on.
Okay. Okay. Now, Susan, before we close, you have a website. It's www.fierceleadership.com. And your website provides a lot of additional resources on the practice of candid and engaging leadership. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about your website and the resources there.
Well, there are a number of things. There's a video, there's some audio interviews, there's a poster somebody can download. There's information on all the practices, and there's also a link to our corporate website, which is fierceinc.com, that talks about all the trainings that we provide. Our clients are every kind of company you could imagine, from the biggest companies in the world to some of the smallest and everything in between. And so, you know, if you want to maybe really begin to influence your company and turn it into a fierce culture, a fierce company, then some training would probably help jumpstart the process.
Okay.
But you can do it yourself. I mean, just read both of the books, and if you read Fierce Leadership or Fierce Conversations, I hope you'll go to Amazon.com and write a review, because I love to see what people are really thinking, how they're really responding to the book.
Well, you know, on the website, we will put a link that people can just click on, and it'll be with the title of the book, and that'll take them to Amazon. So they'll have easy access to write a review that way also.
Great.
And we'll also put a link on the website to fierceleadership.com, so they have a quick one-click way to get there too.
Yes, because we wanted to provide some just free resources to anybody who's curious about how to get started and to have a deeper understanding of what the book is even about before they even read it.
And I found the resources on your website to be phenomenal. So from the poster that you mentioned and the videos and the like. So I thoroughly enjoyed being on your website and got a lot out of it as well, besides reading the book.
I'm really glad you did. I mean, I honestly would never have guessed when I started Fierce Inc. 7 years ago that there would be such a resonance with people all over the world, and our courses are being taught in many different languages everywhere that you could imagine, and it's deeply gratifying. We also have a division called FITS, Fierce in the Schools, where we're teaching teachers and principals and superintendents, and then we're going to be bringing it to the kids themselves so that they can learn how to navigate their lives successfully, one conversation at a time. And we're also working with within the government. So our mission is to transform the conversation central to our clients' success. Our vision is to help change the world one conversation at a time.
Oh, those are both wonderful. Those are outstanding. Well, Susan, I want to thank you not only for sharing your time with me and the audience this evening, but also for sharing your insights on leadership that is truly upfront, candid, and engaging. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I really enjoyed Fierce Leadership for the insight. I love the examples that you provided in the book. They really spoke to me. And again,
and I hope it made you laugh from time to time.
I had to smile, and on time to time, like I said, I had to be embarrassed a little, because I had bought hook, line, and sinker, and I was doing all those bad things too.
Well, nobody's bad for doing those things. I mean, we didn't know any better. We've been fed a lot of wrong beliefs. We've been told this is the way it is for so long, and we just didn't stop to say, wait a second, that doesn't ring true. That doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. So now's a good time to do that, because look where our leadership practices have gotten us.
Sure.
Nothing to write home about. So it's time to make a change.
It is. And besides all of the stories and the concepts in the book, what I haven't mentioned yet to our audience is you have a lot of very thought-provoking exercises that challenge the readers to be honest with themselves, to do a deep dive examination, and then it challenges them to come up with a course of action that'll enable them to embody and display to their organization the attributes of being a fierce leader.
Both of the books are really almost self-guided leadership development, personal leadership development books, so that every chapter in both of the books ends with an action plan, a suggested action plan, and exercises that are quite thought-provoking, as you said yourself.
Yeah. And so not only would I highly recommend that our audience get a copy of Fierce Leadership for themselves, but I really do hope that they step up to the challenge of doing that deep dive examination and then working to become fierce leaders and to transform their organization so that their organization is more candid and engaging internally besides being so with their customers and clients.
Yep. So it's not much point in just reading a book and saying, wow, and then doing absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that it will create impetus for action and for change when people recognize that that's appropriate.
I hope so, too. And congratulations again on being on the Times bestseller list. That is a great accomplishment.
It's a huge mystery how that happens, and so we were really delighted to learn that it's number 4 on the list.
Wow.
So,
well, that is great.
Yeah, really exciting. Yeah.
Well, I know one way. It starts with having a great book, and Fierce Leadership is truly a great book.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
And thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Susan Scott for being with us today and sharing her insights on using candid, meaningful dialogue to literally transform an organization. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Susan Scott and Fierce Leadership at www.fierceleadership.com. Until next time, so long.